Welcome to Help and Hope, a podcast of CCEF.
Thanks for joining us this week. My name is Andrew Ray, and I'm here with
Tim Lane
and David Pallison.
How are you guys feeling today?
I'm actually feeling pretty good. This has been a good summer, and there is something about this time of year where we are about to launch into the fall semester that always creates a little bit of like preseason adrenaline.
Yeah, I'm doing well. We're ending at the time of this podcast our fiscal year at CCF. What's today? The 23rd of August.
Yeah.
I sent out a letter beginning of August. We needed about $130,000 to meet our budgeted goal of what we wanted to raise, and I think today we are $30,000 shy. So $100,000 has come in over the past 22 days. It's just been so encouraging. And one of the things I just want to say is at CCF, we are not sitting around wringing our hands during this difficult economy. I mean, we're making hard and wise decisions about being fiscally responsible, but we're itching to do things and we're planning those things. And the folks that are out there that are weighing in and giving the $50 gift, the $25 gift, the $10,000 gift, all that, every time those gifts come in, just so encouraging to us. And we're very upbeat and enthusiastic about the ministry here.
You guys ready for two questions?
Sure
ready?
Are. Far
okay.
Away.
Probably just one. But
right. How many different offices have you had at CCEF?
Now, this is a good question.
It is because, a good question. Has a unique underside.
I lived here at CCF in 1988, 89, I think was the year. It was my second year in seminary. On the third floor, CCF used to let two Westminster students live here in exchange for us cleaning the building every night, starting at about 10 o'clock. And I lived up on the third floor with a friend of mine for a year. So that's one room that I occupied. And then I graduated, came back in 2001, and I was in an office that a colleague had prior to me. And then now I'm in my other office as executive director. So I've occupied three rooms in this building. I think David and I have a similar history.
Well, I also lived here. I lived here from, and I wasn't committed. I actually lived here. It was my first year in seminary. It was the first year after CCF got this building. And at that point, there were 8 or 10 people living here. The counseling center occupied only a few offices. Mm-hmm. I lived in the same room Tim did, up on the third floor. And that, at one point, that was also my office many years later. But I've had, if I can count, and I won't swear to accuracy, but I think I've been in seven different offices over 30 years.
And we've got you scheduled to move three more times within the next week. So,
what does that moving do for you? Does it keep you fresh?
That's a hard question
pause.
To answer.
He's trying to be nice with me.
Right. The last office I had a beautiful view. Well, the two prior offices had beautiful views. The one I have now looks at the parking lot, but it's strategically located around where the rest of the faculty are. So, I would say I enjoyed my other offices more. But we're here to work, not look out the window.
So, if you weren't a counselor, what would you be?
My career goals, such as, if that word's probably a little bit pretentious, but before I became a Christian, were to write tormented existential novels in Tahiti, kind of a literary Gauguin. So probably if I weren't a counselor, I'd be dead. And I mean that. Christ saved me, and I am doing what I am, in a sense. And I wouldn't say just counselor. Counselor, teacher, writer, editor, consultant. Grandfather to your children. And it's a whole bunch of different things I do. And this is who I am. Mm-hmm. So,
Yeah, I am thankful. I love the job that I do. And probably one of the reasons why is it mimics as closely as you possibly can what I would be doing if I weren't doing this job, and that'd be pastoring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're teaching, you're counseling, you're administrating, you're leading. Those types of things resonate with me, and the fact that you're doing a multiplicity of things keeps it interesting. So if I weren't doing this job, I would more than likely be pastoring a church somewhere.
Yeah, and for me, I'd be on the PGA Tour.
Is that right?
But I just missed the cut this year. So
well, maybe next year. Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay, so we have an Ask the Counselor question that came in this week, and it's a fairly long question, but I think it's important for us to hear it. So here we go. We have recently moved our one-year-old, who is our first child, from our room into his own bedroom. I'm finding it really difficult. I know God works in all things for the good of those who love him, but I don't know yet if my son is included in that category. And so fear for his safety, both physically and spiritually. I know God is good, but I read Lamentations recently and was reminded of all the awful things that happened to God's people then, to children in particular, unquote. And so basically, our questioner comes down to asking, how can I learn to trust?
Well, there's not a person with kids that doesn't hear that question and resonate at some level with it. One of our colleagues was sharing the other day that one of his children is expecting and their concerns about the baby, and he said, you know, if it were happening to me, it would be one thing, but the fact that it's happening to my child and their child is quite another. It puts it in a different category. So my immediate response is, I totally can identify with this person. My wife and I, Barbara, we have four children, and there's not a day that you don't get up thinking, okay, what will this day bring, and wrestling with that at some level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll build on that. This woman, I presume it's a woman.
It is.
She's written very wisely. She's groping, reaching in exactly the right direction. She's asking very important questions, a lot of different kinds of questions. I mean, one, can bad things happen to us? Mm-hmm. Another, does God care for our children, you know, at the point when they're pre-conscious faith? And I think we answer yes to both of those. The Bible is so clear that God does not treat us merely as individuals. He treats us in the context of families and ultimately his family. Does that mean we can predict whether disastrous or hard things will happen to us, let alone to those or to our children? And we don't control that. But if I were to lay out just three questions that it seems to me capture directions that she can go in moving towards a growing faith. One is, who really sees? God sees. God sees in the dark. I think with that, when you got a one-year-old and that child has lived in your bedroom, you have the illusion that you can actually see everything going on. But in fact, the only one who really sees is God. And then right with that, who cares? And we, as parents, you cared. You would lay down your life for your child, but God cares more. You know, there's that amazing passage in Isaiah 49 that even a nursing mother could forsake her child. I've written you on the palms of my hands. Mm-hmm. You're the apple of my eye. It's the pupil of my very eye. Mm-hmm. God's care is far more profound, powerful, knowledgeable, seeing than mine. So I really don't have the sight to see all that's going on with my child, and I don't even have the care that's as deep as God's. And then the third one is, who is strong? I don't have the strength to guarantee my child's safety. Only God does. And this might be a place where it's helpful to put myself in the same shoes as my son. I am, before God, I am not that much different from a one-year-old. I have certain powers that as an adult are more than a one-year-old, but it's very relative. It's a little bit of ability compared to almost none, and we're talking about a need for life rather than death to triumph in our lives. So, you know, who sees, who cares, who is strong? Mm-hmm. I need someone to see me. I need someone to care for me. I need someone to be strong in my life. Mm-hmm. And so does my son. And those are things that, as I said it right in the beginning, it doesn't guarantee the future, but then what does? You know, a mother can be as caring as can be and can't control the good or the bad that comes into a person's life. So our relationship to God is a context and a framework, a foundation in which to face the hard things with trust mm-hmm. and the good things with gratitude.
Yeah, mm-hmm. How do you have an appropriate fear in light of the fact that we live in a very fragile world? I mean, Peter is pretty clear when he says we're like a blade of grass. You know, we're green in the morning, but quickly the sun rises. The dew is quickly evaporated, and the actual leaf of the blade of grass withers under the heat of the sun. And there's this sense in which this person can actually be tapping into something that oftentimes we overlook, and that is that we're not invincible, that that difficult things do happen,
will all die.
That's right. Yeah, and so that's an appropriate thing. You don't want to live with this hubris or pride that I'm invincible, nothing bad will happen to me. And yet, how do you carefully allow that to shape the way you make wise decisions about the care for your children and yourself? At the same time, how do you, by God's grace, prevent that from running amok? And that seems to be the struggle. And David is helpful in pointing us to the goodness of God. I think about James, where he says over and over again, cast your anxiety on him because he cares for you. And that's actually, you know, something that you're doing on a regular basis. It's not once for all. It's an ongoing activity. So throughout any given day, I'm casting my anxieties about the fragility of my life and the life of my children on the Lord because he cares. And that ultimately is the big question, isn't it? I mean, do we really have somebody in this universe, in this big, scary world that cares, that loves us? And we can't bypass that question without going to the cross and saying, this is it.
He cares. You know, this at the price of his own life.
Yeah. And that's where you cast your anxieties on him moment by moment because he cares. Well, how do you know he cares? Jesus' life, death, resurrection, his death, but also his resurrection, this promised hope. And then I would say one other thing quickly is that fears like this tend to run amok more quickly as you isolate yourself from God's people. And so there would be an appropriate place for this couple, this wife, to engage in Christian community and share these fears and concerns and have the prayers of God's people being offered up for her, the encouragement, and coming out of kind of that individualistic place where I'm just by myself, I'm thinking about these things, I'm pondering them more than I'm being encouraged to ponder the very things that David and I are talking about. And I don't say that theoretically. I have to go there. Mm-hmm. You know, as my children leave the house for school, it's a big, bad, scary world out there. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, there are other folks involved, school authorities and bus drivers and other parents who are watching out for kids. But I have to entrust my kids every day they walk out the door to the Lord and cast my anxieties at whatever level they may be that day upon him and remind myself of the gospel, of God's grace.
Thanks for coming in.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, this is good. Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you for joining us. For more information about CCEF and its resources, visit us on the web at ccef.org.